Social Daily, the Premier League podcast.
Blue is the colour for Chelsea, and blue is also how they're feeling after the Red Hot Gunners blasted them all over the Emirates. The midweek round of Premier League fixtures kicked off with a five-star night in North London for Arsenal, and there are four more top-flight tussles to talk about tonight, including a Merseyside derby at Goodison Park. Don't you just love midweek footy under the lights? This is FSD, the award-winning Premier League podcast. My name's Niall, and those two are Marley and Joel. Hello, lads.
Good morning.
Hello, guys.
Manchester City not in action till tomorrow, of course. They take on Brighton. Liverpool take on Everton, and Arsenal have already got their job done in terms of the Premier League title race, so they go to top of the pile. But before we get stuck into last night's huge victory over Chelsea for Mikel Arteta's side, need to reveal the massive news that Football Social Daily is now number 28 in the top 100 indie soccer all-time chart on Good Pods. Get the champagne out, boys.
That's going on my CV. I don't even care.
I've got the tattoo booked in. It's going to run the length of my body. Just all that top 28 on indie pods.
It feels like when FIFA made that trophy for Lewandowski, you know, just purposely to let him win something when Messi took the Ballon d'Or off him. Feels like that. We'll take it. I don't know what it is, but we'll take it.
Well, who will be popping those corks at the end of the Premier League season? Because this title race looks like it could be going right down to the wire. That being said, Liverpool have had a couple of iffy results recently, and they'll need to avoid one tonight at Goodison Park against their rivals from across Stanley Park. We'll get onto that a little bit later, but first, let's talk about last night's game at the Emirates. Chelsea against Arsenal. I think all of us, with the season that Chelsea have had, were expecting an Arsenal win. Chelsea went into the game without Cole Palmer, so maybe that even swung people's opinion more in Arsenal's favour, Joel. But did you expect 5-0? Did you really think it would be that bad?
God, Chelsea. They really are good at the salsa, aren't they? One step forward, two steps back every single week. It's just, they showed more fight in the Everton game, arguing for that penalty, than they did during the entire game of this one against Arsenal. I've never seen Arsenal dismantle a Chelsea side as bad as this in, literally ever. I can't remember a time, because I always remember Jose Mourinho taunting Arsenal and Arsene Wenger every time they played Arsenal, because Chelsea always used to get one over them. But this time it really felt like the tide had changed in London when it came to that game. I mean, in every single area, Arsenal were just so much more dominant than Chelsea. And it doesn't come as much as a shock, because Chelsea have been, like I say, the most unpredictable side, I think, in the Premier League this season, but more so for the wrong reasons. Every game feels like they could easily concede potentially three or four, doesn't matter who the team are. And like I say, it just two steps back and barely any steps forward this season. I still don't know if Pochettino knows what his best team is. I still don't think he's got the right players at his disposal. Jackson, I don't know who the hell the scout was who found him, because I remember seeing that they thought he was similar to Didier Drogba. Like, Didier in drag. Like, there's absolutely no comparison.
Oh, that's a good one, that. That's a good one. I might have to steal that one. My question around Chelsea is just, how is it going to improve? I'm struggling, Marley, to see where things get better, especially not between now and the end of the season. Of course, there's only a handful of games left. Chelsea have missed the opportunity to get through to the FA Cup final. They did reach the Carabao Cup final. So actually, in cup competitions, they've been all right. They've reached the semi-finals and the final of both domestic cup competitions this season. But in the Premier League, they have been so inconsistent. And when I say, how does it improve? I'm not talking about, should they sack Pochettino? I'm going on a deeper level than that. I'm talking about these players that they've signed up to 8-year contracts. They can't really sign anyone in the summer unless they get rid. And then that means they'll have to sell these players on 8-year contracts for big money, which people won't be paying off the basis of the performances from this season. The only experience they've got in the side really is a 40-year-old centre-back who didn't even play last night. I have no idea how they get any better. And that must be scary if you're a Chelsea fan.
Well, they did bring Thiago Silva on for 12 minutes at 5-0, which was the most embarrassing thing ever.
His wife will be on Twitter this morning.
She's already been on. Honestly, it's the one time I've agreed with Bell Silver. Jesus wept. She actually put a tweet on. It was the three monkeys that hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, and just like, you know, kind of like, if I speak, I'm in big trouble, because I kind of said I was not going to speak. You know, I normally think she's a ball bag, but, you know, most of, actually last night she had a point because he come on for 12 minutes and Pochettino, I don't know why he put him on. It's embarrassing. The game's gone and all the rest of it, but maybe I'll come back to that later. But yeah, Chelsea, where do you start? I mean, we said when they spent, you know, £1 billion and they were announcing signings every week and we were seeing 7-year contracts, 8-year contracts. For players like Badiashile and Di Zassi and Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez and Mudryk, we all know that it's an amortization thing, but also, if you remember Chelsea back in the day, they had Winston Bogard on a 4-year contract and they signed him from Barcelona and they realised he was crap, so they wanted rid of him. And he was on 40k a week, which was in, you know, 1999, 2000, 2001, something like that. It was a lot of money. Like, 40 grand was probably today's 120, I would say. Something like that. And he just, when they wanted rid of him, he just sat there and was like, no, you've put me on this contract for 4 years. I'm entitled to 40 grand a week for 4 years. I don't care where I play, if I play, and who I play with. I'm having this money because I've signed the contract, so have you. If Chelsea have that problem again, they've got multiple players on contracts like that on way more than 40 grand for the next 8 years. You know, we're talking 2030, 2032.
Well, that's what I mean. How does it improve for Chelsea? Because there's no way that they can get themselves out of this situation quickly in terms of the amortization, in terms of the players on 8-year deals. The only way it gets better as if the players improve. So I'm just struggling to see even 2 years ahead. And maybe that's short-sighted of me. I'm struggling to see it.
I am. I don't understand how, you know, like, I get the idea of potential and teams are going to be better because they're young and, you know, they're going to mature as a team and stuff. And that's absolutely fine. However, when you've spent the money they've spent and you're on the wages they're on, you want players that can come in and you know, change the game quickly. You've got Enzo Fernandez there for 100 million and he's just an okay player. Like, he doesn't look incredible. He can't grab a game by the scruff of the neck and dictate it. And you go through the team and I would argue that no one is good enough at all to be where Chelsea want to be, with the exceptions of Cole Palmer, who didn't play last night because he was ill, and Conor Gallagher, and that's it. That is it. Like, you look through the team, Petrovic, you know, he's a second choice goalie. He's not that bad, to be fair to him. Di Zassi.
But the point is they signed Sanchez for decent
exactly.
money from Brighton. So straight away, you're already using your second choice keeper. You can just start from the very top of the team sheet. You've got a problem.
Yeah. And Sanchez is injured at the minute, but there was a period not too long ago, a few weeks, a couple of months ago, where Sanchez was back and Petrovic was still getting games over him. So he's established himself as first choice now. So there's your problem, because you flushed 20 million and, you know, probably 100 grand a week for Robert Sanchez. That's gone down the drain. Di Zassi is awful. Badiashile's even worse. They're on big money. Cucurella's the worst excuse of a left back I've ever seen. He struggled to get in most teams around Europe, never mind Chelsea. 63 million quid the guy was. He was useless. He got taken for a walk by Havertz on that goal. Havertz just manhandled him, and I know he's a big lad, but Jesus, you know he's a big lad, so get into him, get stuck in.
I mean, that whole left side for Chelsea, I agree with what you say about Cucurella has been a poor signing for Chelsea, but even Mykhailo Mudryk, who is absolutely jet-heeled when it comes to his pace, but end product, it's just not there. He was signed for £80 million, doesn't get put in the same category as Antony at Manchester United, for example, but we are talking about a significant level of investment here in a young player who might come good. But still, for that significant sum, you'd be expecting more. So that whole left side for Chelsea, Cucurella and Mudryk last night, just not good enough. And then Jackson up front. I mean, Joel was just talking about him earlier. What is going on there?
He's horrific. He winds me up. He's everything I don't like as a striker. He's got an ego. He hasn't got the ability to back it up. He's tall, but he's not strong. Like, he can't sort of, you know, Joel mentioned he was sort of compared to Drogba at the start. Drogba, you could give him whatever you want, any ball you wanted, and he'd protect it with his life. But Jackson just lets you have it. Jackson just, you know, oh, so I couldn't get that one. It wasn't quite right. He goes through one-on-one at the end, and he's got the whole goal to him. I think it's like 3-0 at the time. And Ali McCoist on commentary went mental. Just like, what are you doing, Jackson? You've gone to the wrong side of the goalkeeper. He goes for like this tiny gap. And there's probably a 6-foot gap to go to. It's an easy finish. And he messes that up. He was 30 million. I never understood why he was signed anyway. He was never an outstanding player for Villarreal, even though he scored quite a few goals, to be fair to him. But you've got him, you've got Noni Mudiyeke on the wing. He tried, to be fair to him, but again, couldn't affect the game. Sterling was on the bench, you know, comes on, does nothing. Again, you know, his powers have completely just ran out now. So everywhere you look at Chelsea, Nkunku's barely played a game since he's come in and just been injured all the time. You've got Alfie Gilchrist at right back who, you know, in fairness to him, he should never be playing because you've spent £1 billion on players and you're still having to rely on your third choice right back because Gusto's ill or injured or whatever. And Reece James
he's been okay, actually. Malo Gusto's probably been their player Gusto's of the season been, outside of Cole Palmer.
Gusto's been really good, especially recently. He's been very, very good. But still, if your right back's good and the rest of your team's rubbish, especially the other three quarters of your back four, you know, that's before you come on to Thiago Silva getting put on in embarrassment and is Pochettino the right guy and all the rest of it. I feel like he's too nice to instill a sort of culture in Chelsea to take them forward. You know, Chelsea need a bit of steel about them. But
it's just a synopsis of Chelsea's season that they smashed Everton 6-0 and then lost 5-0 in their next Premier League game. I think that sums it up quite nicely. And speaking of Nicholas Jackson, Michael Jackson would do a better job up front.
I was just thinking, when Nicholas Jackson looks in, when he looks at the man in the mirror, it's certainly not Didier Drogba looking back at him, that's for sure. How can you spend 200 million in a midfield and you still need to get a striker? Why was that money not prioritised for getting a top quality striker?
Well, they Chelsea signed Lukaku, didn't they? I know this was pre Todd Boehly, but that was a disaster. That was 90 million that didn't work.
That's one that gets brushed under the carpet. But you know what? I kind of sympathise with that because he was one of the best strikers in the world following that Scudetto win with Inter Milan. Like, he looked like a different beast.
He messed it up for himself, Lukaku, didn't he, with that interview he did?
Yeah, especially when he flirted with the media. He didn't do himself any favours and then ended up going to Roma because he started talking bad about Inter. So, yeah, that's another story for another day. But I just think that a lot of these Chelsea youngsters, they're not as good as what everyone thinks they are. But just because Chelsea have paid a lot of money for them, everyone's perception of them is that they're going to be world beaters. But I think I've realised, I know you mentioned Antony and Mudryk, they're almost in the same mould in that they've done it in pretty lacklustre leagues. Both clubs have paid based on pure potential. And then they have such a huge pressure to fulfil that because of that price tag that they'll probably never reach it because they're never that player. That's why I'm realising if you're going to pay about 80-odd million plus for a 20-year-old player, it's got to be a Jude Bellingham-esque mould, wherein they're doing it in the top league, Champions League, they're getting called up for their country, big plays in their country, the personalities are a bit more, you know, mature. I just don't think it's worth the financial risk anymore for clubs to be spending 80, 90 million plus on these young guys, unless they are absolute world beaters. Why would you just go down that route? It makes no sense to me anymore.
What about 60 million on Kai Havertz then? Because he scored twice. The former Chelsea player who scored their winning goal in the Champions League final against Manchester City in 2021 returns to face his former club, the club that he left to sign for Arsenal. And he's had a lot of stick this season. I know, Joel, that you were quite keen to suggest that he shouldn't be as harshly criticised as he has been over this campaign. What did you make of his display?
Yeah, like I mentioned last week on the podcast, I think he's been really effective for Arsenal. And I know we were all really critical, myself included, when they first signed him. I still think 60 million was a lot. But I just go back to his days at Leverkusen, and there's a reason why he was so, you know, revered for his position. He was awesome at Bayer Leverkusen, but he was in his right position. And then he went to Chelsea and they started trying to play him in an attacking midfield role, and that's not his position. He's in the position that Arteta's putting him in right now, which is almost like that 9.5, not as much as a top out-and-out striker, but a little bit more of a drop-back, almost like a false nine, I would consider him as, to be honest. And he's actually pulled up some really big goals for Arsenal, and then as soon as Arteta puts him in that midfield role, his effectiveness completely goes because he's not a midfielder. So I think, you know, you have to credit Arteta for that. He's seen the fact that his best quality is being further towards the goal than being further away from it, which is what Chelsea didn't really recognise. We saw it when Arsenal got beat last week and he put him in midfield and they lost because they tried to put Gabriel Jesus there, and Jesus got, what, 4 goals this season as a striker. Havertz has got one of his best seasons in the Premier League, 11 goals this season.
But I also think, though, Joel, if Arsenal don't win the Premier League this season, they can look at the effectiveness of their two main forwards, Gabriel Jesus and Kai Havertz. Will they look at the fact that their two centre-forwards, Marley, their two main strikers, aren't quite cutting edge enough in front of goal to get the job done?
It could be the case. I kind of hope they win it so they don't come sniffing around Alexander Isak and we've got to put a massive price tag on him to warn them off him. But yeah, it's the obvious sort of stick to beat Arsenal with. You think how, you know, they scored the most goals in the league, so it's kind of silly that we're even mentioning this, that maybe they need more goals. But yeah, you do wonder if you put a sort of goal poacher style, you know, serial finisher in that team, like how good can they be? Because they've got everything else. The back four is excellent. I mean, Ben White's scoring goals from right back. He's even scoring them by mistake these days. And then you've got the midfield looking balanced and creative. I mean, Martin Odegaard is just an unbelievable player. Like the way he just runs games. That's what Chelsea want from Enzo Fernandez. And you see Odegaard just running rings around him last night. So, you know, there's levels to the game. Enzo Fernandez isn't at them. Odegaard's at the highest he can possibly be. I think he's one of the best players in the world at the minute, Martin Odegaard. You know, Saka's chipping in, didn't score last night. But, you know, if they don't win it, that is the obvious place to look, I suppose. But we'll have to wait and see if the spread of goals is enough, because that will be the narrative. However, if you do that, you've kind of almost got to get rid of one or two. Like, if Jesus isn't playing up front for Arsenal, what's the point in having him at all? Because are you going to move into a wing where you've already got Trossard, Martinelli, Saka, etc.? Smith Rowe doesn't really play, even though when he does, he looks really good. So yeah, it's a bit of an issue, but it's that cliche, nice headache to have type of thing for Mikel Arteta in the summer when that comes around.
So what does last night's 5-0 result do for the Premier League table? Well, it puts Arsenal back on top of the pile. They're on 77 points, of course, having played a game more than Liverpool, who face Everton in the Merseyside derby tonight. And we'll talk about that next on Football Social Daily.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily, the award-winning Premier League podcast. I love midweek football, Marley. I love football under the lights. I just think it adds a different dimension to things. It's what I remember, I think, growing up watching football as a youngster, those night games where you're walking down the street and you spot the floodlights from a mile or two away and you can kind of smell the burgers cooking outside the ground. And I guess it's all the same stuff that you experience on a Saturday, except the fact it's dark. And especially when there's a derby game under the lights, it just adds that different dynamic. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I wonder whether we'll feel the same about tonight's Merseyside derby at Goodison Park. One of the last Merseyside derbies at Goodison Park there will be, because of course Everton moving to a new stadium on Derby Day, people say,
anything can happen. It's a derby. All form goes out of the window. Well, not in this derby, it doesn't, because 9 times out of 10, Liverpool come out on top. Do you think we'll see the same thing again tonight at Goodison?
Yeah, ultimately, yeah. However, speaking of sort of experiences and new things, I do wonder if this is the perfect test of Sean Dyche not wearing a white shirt and tie. For the first time at the weekend, he wore a club suit and it was so weird.
A tracksuit, yeah, I noticed that.
Properly weird. I never... I watched Match of the Day and I hadn't heard anything about him, you know, like the discourse around it of... It didn't sort of permeate into my Twitter feed about like this thing. And it was one of them where as soon as you see him, you go, that's weird.
Well, I noticed it straight away because they did a pre-match interview with him about 3 hours before kickoff at Goodison Park when they played Forest at the weekend. And I thought, oh, Sean Dyche is wearing a tracksuit. But that being said, it's only 1:30. There's an hour and a half till kickoff. So surely he's going to go inside and get changed before the fans turn up. Never did.
No.
Never did.
Weird.
Changed to a tracksuit. And it seems to have worked.
Chincha tracksuit, they win a 6-pointer, 2-0. And even the players after the game, Tarkowski was talking about it, saying, yeah, it was a bit weird. Like, we expected him to put the suit on or something, and he just didn't. And then we won 2-0. So, hopefully, well, maybe he'll do it on Wednesday night and we'll get a result again, you know. But we'll see. But in terms of the game, it's a big one for Liverpool because this is the one where It's just that factor in it. It's Everton, it's Goodison, it's a Wednesday night, it's on the telly and all the rest of it, and that is your banana skin. They're fighting for their lives. They also really, 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 almost as much as they want to stay up, they want to chuck a massive spanner in the works for Liverpool and beat them.
Yeah, they want to tank Liverpool's chances of sending Jurgen Klopp away with a Premier League title. And even though it's against Liverpool at the moment, Everton would be able to say, not officially, but you know all the Evertonians would go, we stopped you winning the league that night.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would be the discourse in schools and workplaces around Merseyside for the next, God knows how long, as long as Everton have got to talk about it, basically. So, yeah, if you speak about form and stuff, you know, Liverpool should wipe the floor with them. However, they've looked wasteful recently. And Everton have looked awful, but a riding, you know, the 2-0 win and, you know, they're only probably one more win away from saving themselves, especially if Luton don't get a win in the next couple of games as well.
Yeah, it's been a pretty wretched season for Everton with the points deductions. The form hasn't been great. And I know a lot of the supporters are a little bit upset with the way that Everton are playing in terms of their style, but they kind of knew that, I guess. When you bring Sean Dyche in as a manager, you expect a certain style of football, you could argue. But I think at this stage, for Everton, it's just about results. It's just about staying in the Premier League. And Sean Dyche will bring you that. We'll talk about Everton a bit more shortly, but Liverpool, you mentioned that they've been a bit iffy lately, but actually the weekend's performance was much closer to where they would expect to be. The players a bit sharper. And I guess that's critical going into these final games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool were probably starting to think we'll win the Europa League and we might win the Premier League. And they, you know, Atalanta turned up and went, oh, not on our watch. And, you know, totally battered them at Anfield, you know, completely took them apart, took their chances and all the rest of it. And yeah, I mean, they probably turned up against Palace and thought we usually beat these. Bit of weird history with the Christian Bull type thing, but we'll roll these over and we'll get back to, we won't lose 2 in a week at Anfield. And, you know, Palace had other ideas and, you know, that's probably the turning point of the season. You know, we were all waiting for someone to have a hiccup in the title race. There might be more. But if there isn't, then that is what it's come down to. Even though Everton fans will say, it's because you couldn't beat us at Goodison 4 games from the end of the season. But it is, that is the fine margins of this. I think it's one of the best title races we've ever seen. Usually the title's done and dusted by game week 34. But not this time. It's still technically a 3-horse race. Arsenal looking great. Liverpool stuttering a little bit. Man City looking not quite at their best, but still grinded out wins and and keeping that sort of juggernaut going towards the fourth title. But yeah, this is might be a nervy one tonight, especially if Liverpool start missing chances like they have been in the last couple of weeks.
Right. I just want to address this. I'm not ignoring Joel, by the way. His computer's crashed. So I'm not just asking Marley all the questions on Football Social today and sacked off Joel. But hopefully he'll be back at some point. That adds a bit of tension to the podcast. Will Joel return in the next 10 to 15 minutes? Yes. It's like that marathon runner who went off course and then got a taxi back to the... back to the correct route and then ended up coming third or something and then failed to tell anyone. Right, let's talk a little bit more about Everton because they had a big win, Marley, against Nottingham Forest, El Deductico, whatever you want to call it. Two teams who, of course, have had their off-field issues this season, but a huge victory for Everton. It gives them a bit of breathing space between themselves and that relegation zone. But the issue that they've had all season is scoring goals. It's been a huge problem. Calvert-Lewin and Beto have not been sharp in front of goal this season, and that's caused them a real issue. They managed to find their shooting boots at the weekend against Forest, but Idrissa Garner-Gay lasers one in from 25 yards. Brilliant finish. And Dwight McNeil also scores a really good goal. They are not the type of goal that you see every week. And it's just something for me that maybe I don't think should give Everton fans too much optimism in terms of chance creation, because as much as they were excellent goals and Everton were good value for them, it's not like you see those sorts of goals go in every week. So I still think those same issues remain.
Yeah, I get your point. You don't score 30 yarders every week, and they managed to score two when they really needed it, to be fair to them. But yeah, it's not like they carved up Nottingham Forest and scored a sort of really good goal.
Well, do you know what? The last couple of times I've been to Goodison Park over the last few seasons, I was there last season. They played Brentford at home. Dwight McNeil scored after 40 seconds from 25 yards. They played Tottenham on a Monday night where they were losing 1-0. Harry Kane, I think, scored a penalty. And then in the last minute of the game, a corner drops for Michael Keane, who lashes in a volley from 20 yards. They've had a few games over the last few years where they have had spectacular strikes. I'm not saying that Everton only score spectacular goals and that's why they're staying in the Premier League. Obviously, they do score conventional goals, which is such a terrible piece of analysis. No goal is conventional, but I guess you know what I'm trying to say. It has felt like that they have produced individual moments of quality at times when required over the last two seasons. And I'm not saying that's the reason they've stayed up, but it certainly doesn't do you any harm.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's coming down to. You know, there's five games to go for them. This is the game in hand on all the teams around them. Obviously, you'd hope it was against someone with less to play for than Liverpool, but, you know, they're relying on moments at the minute, and as long as they get them, it's a risky game to play, but, you know, as long as they get them, they'll be happy. They won't care. However, it will be another thing next season where we look at Everton and say, do they create enough chances? Because chances are they'll probably be in this situation again next season where they're scrapping against, you know, the drop with 10 games to go and what have you. So it is a problem, but maybe it's a problem for another day, and you worry about that when, you know, when it's kind of just like getting over the line now, whether it bounces in off someone's ball bag or whatever. It doesn't matter. Whether it, you know, look at the goals Calvert-Lewin scored in the last four weeks or whatever it's been. He deflects one from the goalkeeper against Burnley. He scores a penalty against Newcastle. You know, both goals shouldn't have happened. They're not conventional goals, but sod it, they'll take it. They're not making any bones about it.
I think a draw would represent a good result tonight for Everton, who just need as many points as possible to steer further clear of that relegation zone. But a draw for Liverpool away at Goodison Park would not be enough to maintain the pressure on those sides around them in the title race. And some might even suggest that even a draw against Everton would knock them out of this title race. We will wait and see what happens tonight at Goodison Park. That is one of four matches taking place this evening. We've got the Gary O'Neill derby as Wolves take on Bournemouth at Molineux. That's also tonight. Crystal Palace, rejuvenated perhaps after their weekend's performance, they take on a Newcastle side who have also been banging them in of late. And the other game is at 8 o'clock, Manchester United against Sheffield United. Sheffield United, not down yet, Marley, But that loss to Burnley, we didn't really talk about it on Monday's podcast, but you can forget about it. They've got 15 points left to play for. They're 10 points from safety. They're not going to win three games, are they, between now and the end of the season?
They're gone. They've been so disappointing this season. They've never looked at any point like they're going to pick up wins. You know, 8-0 at Newcastle earlier in the season. They've lost 5 and 6 as well, I think.
Yep, so 8-0 Newcastle, 5-0 Arsenal, 6-0 in the other Arsenal game, 5-0 Burnley in that first game they played against them at the start of the season, 5-0 Brighton, 5-0 Aston Villa, and actually they've conceded 88 Premier League goals this season. Derby have the record for the most goals conceded in that stinker of a campaign where they only picked up 11 points in 2007-2008. They conceded 89 goals.
Really?
So
Sheffield United are going to concede 100 goals this season.
Sheffield United could be the first team in the Premier League to concede 100 goals. You're spot on. And the scary thing is they can only concede one more goal between now and the end of the season. There's 5 games left. There's no chance that they're keeping that record intact. No chance.
I didn't realise it was that bad.
Yeah. So based off of that, and I know it's only a small piece of information in terms of that statistic, but where do you think Sheffield United are? They can't be considered worse than Derby because they've got 5 more points at this stage than Derby had. But where do they rank? Because if they're not the worst team of all time, with the honour going to Derby, they're one of.
Yeah, they're down there. They have to be. They have literally, from the things you've just said, 15 points. If they lose all 5 games from now to the end of the season, 15 points. I mean, I don't think there's any teams that have got 12, 13 or 14 from memory. Obviously, going back through 30 years of history there, but I don't think there's been that many that close. And yeah, if you watch them play, I mean, the defending is criminal. It's just so bad. I mean, the Burnley game at the weekend, the 2 goals, I think the first two goals were Sunday league stuff. Like, they cannot give away goals like that, especially to your relegation rivals, and especially in the crunch end of the season where you need to be just grinding things out and just keeping it tight at the back, trying to nick one from a set piece or on the counter attack or whatever. But they were woeful, absolutely awful. They've changed manager. It lasted for a few weeks, the Chris Wilder thing, where they looked a little bit harder to beat, but it was just that little bounce. And then they've soon come back down to where they really are, which is just an awful team. So yeah, they'll be gone. I mean, what do they need? They need to win at least one of the next two to stop going by the end of April, basically.
Yeah. I'm actually going to their game against Manchester United tonight at Old Trafford. I was saying in the Telegram group that I've packed my sandwiches ready just in case for after the game, if Chris Wilder are. So we'll talk about that game, I'm sure, on tomorrow's Football Social Daily. The Merseyside derby will no doubt be a point of focus, as will Manchester City's game with Brighton, which takes place tomorrow night. And you can join the conversation in the Telegram group or on social media by clicking any of the links in the description. Also, if you hit follow or subscribe on FSD, that way you'll never miss an episode of this podcast again. But from myself, Marley and Joel, who never made it in the end, that's it for today. See you next time.
Football Social Daily is a Voice Work sport production for the Sports Social Podcast Network.